Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello, and welcome to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. I'm Kelly Taylor. Today on the show is Andrew Rael. He's from a little country called Moldova. If you hadn't heard of it, that's okay. Neither had I. As a teenager in Moldova, he developed an interest in EDM, or electronic dance music, and started making his own tracks. He eventually got the attention of the massive DJ and producer Armin van Buuren, and well, fast forward to today, and he's touring all over the world every weekend, pretty much, as a DJ and producer with his own style of trance music. He regularly headlines the main stages of big music festivals like EDC in Vegas, Ultra Music Festival in Miami, Electric Zoo in New York City, Tomorrowland, and more. You can also see him in the main rooms of some big nightclubs like Marquee in Vegas. Actually, he had just flown in from playing there the night before when we recorded this. He's a classically trained musician and just really lives a completely opposite life of mine. So it was pretty fascinating to meet him. I hope you enjoy.
From the Fox 11 studios in Los Angeles, California, it's the Olympic and Bundy podcast with host Kelly Taylor.
Woke you up early for the sunrise. Then you fell asleep in the car ride. Gave you my jacket because it's cold outside. Wish that I could bottle this moment. Take it home and sip it like Moet. I just wanna tell you it'll be alright. Baby, I'm trying to be optimistic. I'm no good at this, no. Baby, I'm trying. Can we just pretend that, that it's never ending? If this is the last summer we have each other, will get so high. Don't cry, we'll make it last forever. Yeah, 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 oh, oh. If this is the yeah, 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 oh, oh. If this is the yeah, 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 oh, oh. If this is the yeah, 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 last summer.
Do you like being 26?
I love being 26. Come on. What do you mean?
26, I loved. Just the year in general. Just a lot of good things happened that year.
I mean, I am 26, but I feel like I'm 36 pretty much.
Really?
With everything I do, with all the traveling, when I get back home and I talk to my friends.
Who are also 26.
They do completely different things than I do. They're like, oh, we just went to see this movie. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm... Yeah. Completely a different stage right now, and with all the scheduling and traveling and all the stress.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
You need to do that. The deadline is then. You need to post that. You need to make that. It's crazy.
So what's So are you on a schedule just as far as like let's say social media?
Yeah, I'm on a schedule, not just social media, just everything. My whole life is a schedule.
Can we talk about today? What you've done so far today?
Today, I mean, technically today I play the show. Mm-hmm. So I played 12:30 to 2:30, almost 3. So that was technically today. And right after that, so that's the best thing about Vegas. At 2:30, I finished my set. At 2:35, I was already in my bed. Because in Vegas at Marquee at the Cosmopolitan, they put us on the same floor as the club is. So you literally walk like 200 meters and you're in the club.
Oh, wow.
So if you want to stay there, obviously, but I knew I'm going to have a long day today. So I went straight to my bed, slept for 2 hours, woke up, flew into LA and hang out a little bit with Emily.
Aww.
Which was not fun at all.
She's terrible.
And now I'm here. Aww. And then tonight I have to fly back to Vegas for more shows.
Are you at the Marquee again?
Yeah, always at the Marquee.
Always at Marquee.
Yeah.
How do you like it there, that room?
I love it in general. I mean, I've been a resident at Marquee for the past 4 years, so since 2014. And I mean, I love it in general, but I feel like I'm so used to that place, to the club, to the same. They put us in the same room. I mean, I've been in, almost in the same room every time. It's like I'm back home.
You know the wallpaper. I know everything.
Funny thing, I used to leave things. I used to hide things in the room, and then I'll be back like a month later. It'll still be there.
Just to see how well they clean the room. That's a good move.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I've been to Marquee, but definitely in a way different experience.
You should come when I play. That's like a really cool experience. Yeah. Emily can tell you. Yeah.
How often are you there?
Pretty much once a month, sometimes once every 2 months. This month I played two times already, so it's always different. We do around 12 to 14 shows a year.
Okay.
At the Marquee in Vegas, and mm-hmm. then a couple of shows, also Marquee New York, Lavo New York, and yeah.
So when you're in the United States, are you spending most of your time in Vegas, New York, maybe Miami?
Not necessarily. We do shows. Last year I released my second studio album, Moments, and we did a huge tour, and it was all over the place. We did not only clubs, we did big venues. We sold out Hollywood Palladium. That was last year. That was last year, right? And Civic Center in San Jose, Webster Hall in New York. And there's so many venues that I can't even remember the names of them. Yeah. So it was a 3 months tour in US.
Wow. Did you get to spend any time when you weren't playing, like in San Jose, for instance, just walking around?
Not in San Jose. I don't think there's much to do. I think we stayed in LA around that time.
Oh, yeah.
But I actually rented a place in Vegas for those 3 months. I rented a house just to have a small studio. I set it up, one of the rooms. I bought a pair of monitors. I brought a bunch of my equipment just so I can produce. And obviously for those shows, we always wanted to improve them. And I constantly needed to do edits on the music because it was all time coded with visuals and everything. So I needed that space where I could work. That's why I rented that house. And over the weekends, I'd be flying to different cities and doing shows. And then in between the weeks, I'll be in Vegas working on the next step.
Yeah, I'm sure having, even if it's not like your main studio, like your home studio,
it's far place. From ideal, but it's workable. I mean, I could do certain things.
Yeah. Are there any Moldovan restaurants in Vegas?
Not in Vegas, but there's one in Boston that I've been to, which is really good. There's one in New York that we've been trying to go to, but we never did. There's a couple of them around US, yeah.
Did you feel like it tasted pretty similar to home?
It was close enough. It was not, it was told, I mean, certainly it was different, but it was close enough. A little bit, at least a little bit of that taste was here, which is great because I love the Moldavian food and I always crave for that food.
So I was actually Googling Moldovan food before you came because I was curious.
What did you find? Tell me.
I still don't know. Because, first of all, there were certain things. I was just looking at Wikipedia and who knows.
You probably found Mamaliga.
Maybe. It was honestly a lot of things that I couldn't pronounce, so it didn't even stay in my mind. I was like, oh, I don't recognize any of this. But there was one thing that was maybe meat wrapped in something.
Meat wrapped in something. Okay.
Is it compared? Like, what would you describe it as? Is it a lot of like meat, a lot of starches,
It's a lot of meat. Yeah, it's a lot of vegetables. I mean, salads are made in a completely different way. We use a lot of mayo in the salad.
Oh.
So pretty much most of the salads are made with mayo for some reason. But that's why their taste completely different from, you know.
Yeah.
And also a funny thing I've noticed that most of the salads are chopped in really small pieces compared to US where they just cut a tomato in a half and that's your salad.
Oh, you mean it's like mega chopped?
Yeah, it's like chopped small pieces.
I love that.
Like all the salads. There's no salad with, you know, big pieces.
So Do you permanently you live in Moldova and then you're just kind of traveling in between?
Yeah,
or do you have
technically I live there, but I would say more than 2/3 of the year I'm traveling the world somewhere. I don't know.
Is all your family still there?
Yeah, my whole family is still there. That's why I go back there, and I have my main studio there. It's an amazing, it's a huge studio. I've worked on it for like a year. I bought all the great equipment, so it's the perfect sound. That's why, I mean, I'm still working on the road, making some ideas and some, I mean, I would call them songs, but whatever. I go back to the studio, that's where I finish them.
Really work on it there.
Yeah.
That's probably like your meditation zone, I would think.
Yeah, that's my church, my studio.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it's got to be hard to be away from it for months on end. People don't like
it. It is. Know? I mean, I've been now traveling for almost 3 weeks, and I'm going back home in 1 week.
Yeah.
And I'll spend 2 weeks back home working on some music and stuff. I need to do some treatment because with all the traveling, you always get something.
Oh, I can't imagine. That honestly was the very first question. When I found out that you were going to come in, I was like, I don't know how you would manage your sleep.
It's very hard. I mean, like last night, I slept for 2 hours. That's it. And hopefully tonight I'm going to get more sleep.
Can you sleep in tomorrow?
I'll have to. I mean, a good thing that I can sleep on the planes very well.
Okay.
I fall asleep even before the plane takes off most of the times.
Yeah.
And that helps me a lot. And already at this point, I can sleep in cars, in planes, anywhere.
Oh.
When I find 10 minutes, I'll sleep it.
That's got to be like a very clutch trait of yours, like for what you do. Like, imagine if you couldn't sleep on planes.
That would be horrible. I would probably fall asleep in the middle of this interview.
Like. Oh, for sure. Yeah, let's just take five right now. I'm just going to take a quick nap. Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean,
can you just like ask a really long question so I can take a short nap?
Just close your eyes. Yeah. We'll turn the lights down.
I feel like I'm boring. All I talk is sleep. I want to sleep.
No, I love sleep. Sleep, you just feel better.
You do.
You know, like your mind is clearer. Yeah. You feel like...
First is chocolate, second is sleep, third is studio.
Yes, in that order.
That's my top three.
I like that chocolate is above studio.
always, number one.
Definitely. So when you're in Moldova... Are you from a bigger city or a smaller town?
I'm from a small town, like about 10,000 people.
10,000 people.
Yeah.
It's between Romania and Ukraine.
It is, yeah.
Right?
The whole country,
It's landlocked between those two.
Yes.
I looked that up.
Well, good thing. Not many people know about that, and usually I have to Google it and show it to them. There's a country called Moldova right there.
Do you think that people from certain smaller countries like that were... You know, maybe most of the world doesn't know where it is geographically. Does that irk them when they're like, why don't you know where this is?
I mean, it was funny at the beginning because, hey, there's a small country right over there. And I was like, people are like, oh, where are you from? And I was like, I'm from Moldova. And they were like, from Maldives? And I was like, yeah, I wish. But no, there's a country called Moldova. It's in Eastern Europe, and it's got great people, great food, and everybody should go and visit at least once.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When you tell people you're from Moldova, have you met anyone that like they'd been there on vacation?
Not many people, but yeah. Great thing is that now that I talk about it, a lot of people are getting more interested into it. And the last show I did, it was a celebration of my radio show, Find Your Harmony. And we got to episode number 100.
Uh-huh.
And we did a big show back in my home country because it was special. And that's where everything started for me. So I decided, okay, the first celebration should be here.
Yeah.
And then this guy from New York obviously knew about it because I posted it, and he flew in all the way from New York for the first time to a foreign country. He's never been before to Europe. So the first country in Europe he experienced was Moldova, and he was very happy, and He said next time he's going to bring a bunch of his friends. So I'm promoting tourism. And
yeah, you're single-handedly bringing.
I was actually the ambassador of tourism officially in my country in 2014 and 15.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I got a bunch of cool things, I know.
Yeah, your parents are probably like, that's our boy.
Yeah, I've received an award from the prime minister. I wasn't there, my dad received it from me, but yeah, it was a big thing.
I heard you say in an interview that your mom is pretty into trance.
She is.
Is she? So yeah. Both your parents, I'm assuming, listen to...
My dad pretends that he's into it.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, yeah.
But I could tell he's not that much. He would listen to everything that my mom plays and he'll be like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, just play something.
Sounds good.
But my mom regularly listens to my radio show, to EDC, Tomorrowland, all the sets from different artists. Sometimes she would text me, oh, did you know that, you know, Armin van Buuren is doing this? I'm like... Where the hell did you find about it? I didn't even know about that. So she's following all the news and she's listening to the music. She knows sometimes more than I do.
I love that. That's great. Do you send her? So maybe including her. And are there other people that you are kind of your go-to people to send a track to when you make it?
Just oh, totally. Yeah, that's my brother. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got into electronic music at the same time. He's 2 years older than me, and we were listening to this music together.
Yeah.
The only difference is that I was studying in a musical school and he was not. So I followed the steps of composing and producing music, but... At this point, he's just one of the managers on my label on In Harmony Music, and he's also taking care of the radio show. He helps me with that. So he knows the music very well, and every time I would finish an idea, I would send it to him, and he's going to be like, oh, no, this sucks.
Yeah.
Work more.
Yeah. That's great because, I don't know, having someone you're that close to, like, you know that they'll tell you.
Yeah,
everything
the,
you
the
need
truth.
To hear,
yeah,
you know?
And he always tells me if it's good, he says, "Yeah, this is good." If it's not, he's straight away, "No,
sucks."
No, sucks.
Get back to your church. So you guys started listening to electronic music together. Was that growing up? Was that
that
the
was
most popular?
Up. No, it was not the most popular music. Obviously, I think the most popular music everywhere is pop music, and we were listening to that as well. But there was one radio station that used to play a lot of electronic music, and back then they used to play a lot of ATB, Armin van Buuren, Tiesto. So that's pretty much where I've heard for the first time electronic music. And since I was in a musical school, I was composing and creating different melodies on piano.
Yeah.
So I didn't have a computer back then. I didn't know anything about recording or anything like that. So obviously, when you create a melody, with that melody, you can do anything you want. You can do a pop song, you can do a rock song, a dance song, whatever. It can be anything. So hearing electronic music on the radio, I've decided, okay, this is the music I like, and this is where I want my melodies to go. And just one day, one of my friends came with a CD, and he said, "Oh, there's some software on the on this CD. You should install it." And that's already at the time when I had a computer. And he was like, "Yeah, just install it and just press some buttons to do something, because I know you like music." And yeah, funnily enough, it was one of the first softwares I've started using. I think it was Apple Studio.
Oh.
And the good thing about it, it was very easy that you didn't have to know much about producing. You would just press three buttons and it would instantly make noise. It would instantly make a rhythm or something. So I got very excited about this. Then I started learning and, you know.
How old are you at this point?
I was about 13 years old, maybe 12, 13.
Gotcha.
Very young.
who was big in like pop music at that time for you?
I wasn't listening to much pop. I was listening to a lot of rock music.
Oh, okay.
A lot of Linkin Park, Nightwish, Rammstein. And even before that, I was listening to a lot of R&B, hip-hop, 50 Cent and all stuff like that. So I went through all genres of music until I got to electronic dance music.
Yeah. No, that's great, though. I feel like I was just, I just met this girl who is doing her own music now, but she was part of a big K-pop group. called Girls' Generation. And it was interesting learning about that because I know with K-pop, and I'm sure with electronic music, it's a huge genre mashup. Like it could be, you know, some like in K-pop, they use a lot of EDM, sort of some like more rock sound, and just mixing it all together, I think is cool. So I don't know. I'm always curious, like in as far as you, when you're creating a track, all the different influences that you're drawing
Yeah,
upon.
I mean, I was always a big fan of classical music.
Yeah.
And I think you can totally hear that in my songs. And when I was studying piano, we used to play Beethoven and Mozart and Chopin all the time. But one of my favorites was always Hans Zimmer. I mean, you cannot really compare him to Beethoven or Mozart. Is more modern, but I think you can hear the influence of Hans in my music.
Is he the one that's
That's Pirates of Caribbean, isn't it?
Is that him?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's how I know that name.
I mean, the original song, let's get technical over here. The original song was composed by Klaus Badelt, but then for the second movie, for the second edition of the movie, he got into the project and he re-edited everything. So the original was composed by Klaus Badelt.
Gotcha. Give credit where credit is due. I like it. Yeah, that's... Those are great movies, by the way.
Yeah, I mean...
Johnny Depp just... it was only up from there.
Yeah. The cool thing for me is always when I watch a movie, most of the times I pay attention more to the music than to the actual movie.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, that was one of my questions for you. When... Is there ever anything that... Not necessarily like when you're listening to another song, but... Are there other things in life that can inspire like a melody or something? Just as far as like, let's say if you hear a phrase in a commercial or...
Not a phrase in a commercial for sure, but like movies, other people's music, nature, all the traveling I do, we usually, I mean, sometimes we dedicate some time to go around and see the nature or, you know, architecture, stuff that could inspire me. And most of the times is the fans. I play a show. I see all the people going crazy, jumping, singing all the songs, knowing all the melodies and everything. And I feel like, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes after I finish my show, I feel very inspired. And obviously you can't do much with it because you don't have your studio. You don't, I mean, you hang out with some people.
Yeah.
I don't spend wisely that time. I don't go to the studio.
You don't always immediately go to sleep.
Yeah, but I wish I could do that. I wish there was a studio every time backstage and I could just jump straight in and start creating music. I feel like I would do 10 songs.
Cosmopolitan needs to build that.
Yeah, they really need to build a studio. They don't have a studio.
Yeah.
That's true.
That would be great.
Yeah.
And then it would just bring out more music. And more fans. I mean, it'd be a whole
more
thing.
Happy.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. So let's say if you're driving in your car or you're in the shower or something, and you think of something in your head, do you just what do? If you're not at your studio,
the
do you just
easiest
record it in
thing
your phone or something?
Is yeah, the easiest thing would be to record it on the phone. And sometimes when I open those ideas, they sound so bad and so weird. I don't know how I get the melody out of that because I'm not a very good singer. But if there's nothing around me, I don't have my computer or nothing, that would be my phone. I would have to record that. And sometimes I would record it and then I would get that idea. I'll be like, oh yeah, I remember this.
Let me
record it. And sometimes I'll be like, what is this? Yeah. That doesn't sound like anything good. So why did I even record that?
Yeah, I mean, but it could be something.
Well, thank you, Steve Jobs, for
exactly.
iPhones.
Yeah, shout out to Steve. So wait, let's go back to Moldova when you got your software.
Yeah.
What is the moment that you were sort of like, I don't want to go this traditional route. I'm going to just keep making music and see where it goes. Like, was there a specific moment when... you thought, all right, this is definitely what I'm going to do.
Well, the specific moment was probably after I released already a couple of successful tracks. So in the, I started to use all that software around when I was 13 years old. And then I released my first song on a very small I think it was Spanish labor or something like that when I was 17. So it took me 4 years to get to something, to the first result. And at that point, I was still in school. And after that, I went into the university. I'm a licensed accountant. So while
really?
I was, yeah.
Wait, you picked accounting?
Yeah, because both of my parents are accountants. So they're like, you have to do the same thing.
That seems honestly like night and day compared to what you do.
I mean, it's good because I can check my statements.
True.
Right now.
True.
With no help. But I was studying accounting, and I was also producing music, sending it to... at that time, I was already signed to Armada Music, so I was already releasing my music on Armin's label and pretty successfully. So people started to pick it up, and Armin was playing pretty much every song that I released in all of his sets. And I started even touring at that time. So I was at the university, also during the weekends, I was traveling to different countries and touring. It was pretty hard, but I finished everything with success.
So did Armin hear one of your songs initially and then just reach out to you and say, hey, love this, let's...
Yeah, I signed one of the tracks to, I think it was a Russian label that had a very good promo. So they were sending all of their releases to different DJs. And why I choose that label, because I saw that most of their releases were supported by big names, by, you know, Tiesto and Armin. So I was like, okay, it's not Armada yet, but it's a good label to start with.
Yeah.
So the first track I released there, it was instantly supported by Armin. The introversion that I made specially for him, he was starting his sets with that track for about 3 or 4 months. And then I followed with a few other releases on that label. And at that point, the guys from Armada and Armin saw that I'm consistent with the music they like. And they said, hey, do you want to join Armada Music?
That had to have been...
I was like, oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, sure, I'll think about it. That had to have been... super exciting.
Yeah.
To hear him even just playing the song that you...
I mean, yeah, played. One day I was just this kid from Moldova in my bedroom trying to make music, and a few days later he was playing my music all over the world for millions of people. It was very exciting.
That's also such a cool testament to technology.
Yeah. I mean, you can even see with YouTube, with all the people that are making vlogs, you know.
Oh, God, yeah.
One day nobody knows about them, and they make a few vlogs, and in a matter of weeks or months, they have millions of followers, and they're like superstars, which is, yeah, the technology is just great.
Yeah, and they're just able to sometimes pull themselves out of, you know, poverty. And suddenly just any bad situation, let's say, and then they can just make money, smartly develop a brand.
Yeah, totally.
It's incredible. Just like with, and we even had a high school class in here. I don't know if you're here, Patrick, but their class was specifically making movies on an iPhone. Like that was the class. And
you couldn't even tell that it was a...
No. And there's a movie called Unsane, I think it's... Yeah, Unsane, that was, premiering in L.A., New York, big places showing, and it was totally shot on an iPhone. I'm like, that's incredible.
Well,
you know?
You see, the nowadays technology, every phone now shoots in 4K, maybe even 5K, you never know,
4K,
tomorrow
yeah.
12K.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you can make movies, you can make a music video on the iPhone.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. I think that's pretty cool. What was the first time that you played a show in front of people?
It was probably back home. I was one of the openers for a bigger act. I can't remember now who it was, but I played like at 3 p.m. when the main act would go around 10 p.m. or something like that. And there were only like 20 people, maybe 30 people in the crowd. And I totally screwed up the first three tracks, mixing them. I mean, obviously, with every mistake, I've learned the technical things. And with the Pioneers, there's this one button that enables effects. And funnily enough, it's a yellow button, so it blinks. But during the day, when the sun is right in your eyes, you can't see that it's on or it's off. And it was on, and it was completely 100% turned on. And it was my first time playing, and it was delay, 100% delay. And it was just crazy. There was delay on everything. And I thought that I'm making something wrong, that I can't hear stuff. And then the DJ before comes to me after three songs, and he's like, hey, look at this button. Do you know what it does? And he just turns it off, and everything came to normal. I was like, oh my God.
Thank
you. I should always check this button, always.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you got to go through that just to, like yeah, you said, and to develop your set.
I had so many mistakes during the years, and now I have like a ritual. So I go to the stage before I have to start playing, and I check everything, all the mistakes that I made before, and I make sure everything's right, and then I start playing.
Gotcha. I heard you talk about somewhere that the first time you went internationally, the first time you played out of your country was the first time you flew.
Yeah.
Right? To India?
I think I was already 18 or 17 years old. I can't recall that. It was the first time I took a flight. The first time, I mean, I went abroad. I mean, before that, I've been to Ukraine and Romania when I was really, really young with my parents. So I wouldn't call that being abroad.
Yeah.
So yeah, I flew on my own to a foreign country, to India. It took me like almost one day to get there. I didn't know anybody. I couldn't even speak English very well. So yeah, it was a crazy experience. I remember explaining to the people from the hotel that I need an iron. So I was trying to show them that,
you know.
Yeah. It was great. Yeah, it's fun remembering that.
Wow. India, also in learning about you, does India have, is there a certain kind of trance music that's big in India?
It's huge. Yeah. I mean, Goa trance comes from
Goa.
India.
That's a state in India, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a city, yeah.
Oh.
And in general, electronic dance music is huge over there. They have huge festivals. Tens of thousands of people are coming all the time. So, yeah. It's...
That's so cool because, obviously, like you said, you didn't even speak the language.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I didn't play a festival for 10,000 people. I played three clubs, and the first club had, again, 30 people in the crowd. The second one had also like 50 people only. The third one was like more packed, like a few hundreds of people.
Yeah.
Which
it's
was
only
good.
Up and up. Yeah. So how long ago was that?
That was 2011 or 12, something like that. Yeah.
So you've been touring for pretty consistently for what, like 6 years?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot.
I mean, I came into US in 2014. That's when I got 21. Because before that, they wouldn't allow me to perform here in the U.S. It was a big issue with visa and everything.
Oh,
so
okay.
I was performing since 2012, like very intensely, but everywhere except U.S. Only when I was 21 in 2014, that's when I came into USA.
Gotcha. That was probably exciting.
It was very exciting, yeah. I joined a big tour with Cosmic Gate. I was supporting them, and they released an album back then, and it was massive shows.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
The first show I performed in the U.S. was Ultra Music Festival in Miami.
The
first one in the U.S.
What?
It was crazy. It was the best thing to start my tour in USA.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine. So when you're about to play headline a big festival like that, I know you said that you go and make sure everything is set up okay.
Yes, correct.
What else is going through your mind? Like, do you do anything sort of mentally to just kind of like...
Not anymore. I used to be very stressed before my shows when I was starting. But now I'm very confident in what I do. I'm very confident in my music. And I could totally see my fans... Even before I go to stage, you can see them. They're wearing shirts and they have flags and stuff like that. So I know the fans are there. And
oh, yeah.
Why would I be worried? Because they came to listen to my music and I have the music ready for them. So
yeah, I bet that would be I watched your whole set from EDC in Vegas, I think in maybe 2015.
Okay.
Were you? Did you do that in 2015?
Yeah, yeah.
And
I did a bunch of EDC Vegas sets, so okay. You tell me which one.
I think it was 2015. Something specifically that... as I was watching it, I feel like if... I was just thinking if I were you and seeing people in the crowd, it's almost like you're just creating this atmosphere where everyone is just... They're totally forgetting everything else that's happening, and they're just so happy.
Yeah, that's what they should
happy.
Do. I mean, that's... That's why I'm there. I want to make sure that they forget about all the problems they have, all the worries they have in their day-to-day life. They're just there in that moment with me, and I'm trying to make them happy, and I'm trying to make them find their harmony. That's my main reason why I'm making this music.
I like that, in harmony.
Yeah, well... The label is in harmony. The radio show is Find Your Harmony. So everything is about harmony in my life.
Yeah. No, that's good. That balance.
Yeah.
It's good to have balance.
Yin
too.
And yang.
Yes, exactly. Do you feel like that? Because you definitely could say that about a lot of music. You know, music is just a kind of an escape maybe. But electronic, what you do, electronic music in general is just... It's not like you're ever sat there listening to like a sad country song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I feel like when you go to a show like yours, it's in addition to obviously the visuals play a role, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But just it really moves you. The sound is just
I mean,
like,
obviously there's different styles and different types of electronic dance music. I mean, you have techno, which is there's not much melody, but it's very rhythmical, so it creates this certain vibe. You have like the pure big room EDM, which is very energetic and makes people jump and go crazy all the time. When with trance music, it's a combination of everything. So some trance tracks can make you go and jump really hard. Some tracks can make you cry, some tracks can make you emotional. So it's a combination of all the elements, all the emotions. And that's why I love trance music, because you know it connects really well with the people, and they really know the songs, they learn the lyrics and the melodies and stuff like that. Where, you know, with other electronic dance music, people just go to party. They really, most of the times, they don't really care about the songs, they just wanna hear a hard drop and a hard beat, and
right. They
want to jump and go crazy, which is great, which is fine. But, you know, me being all about harmony, that's why I prefer trance music. It connects very well to the people emotionally.
Yeah, that's interesting. So that kind of, to you, is sort of the difference between trance and some other forms of EDM is like people are going there. And
people are very emotional. You can see people cry in the crowd.
Really?
I've had big guys coming to me after my shows everywhere and just crying and telling me how they felt and showing me all these emotions. And you'd never expect that from these guys. I mean, they're like big, big guys.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, really weird, but also nice at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of different emotions.
I like when people show their vulnerable side.
Yeah.
Like that. You know, I think it's okay to cry. It's okay to show emotion because everyone feels it, right?
Yeah, that is true.
Do you ever get emotional when you're making music or...
Oh, totally.
Are there any songs that kind of tug on your heartstrings?
Yeah, I always get emotional when I'm producing music. That's how I know a song is very good. And most of the times, you know... I would be in my studio and create something, and I would like it so much. I would stand up and start jumping and screaming around, and then I would find out that my brother is in the corner watching watching me. I'm like, what the heck is going on with you? Or even back in the days when I was producing in my bedroom, it was the same thing would happen, and my mom would open the door and would look at me like, what's going on right here? And I was jumping, and I mean, that's a sign that the steps I'm making and the music I was making is good.
Oh, yeah.
But it felt really... And the moment I would see they see me jumping, I would stop. I'm like, oh, no, nothing happened. I'm just, you know, doing my thing.
Just hanging out.
Yeah.
Stretching.
Yeah, stretching. Yeah. A little bit of gym.
Yes. Oh, yeah. So When you're in the process of creating a song, I know we were talking earlier that maybe you come up with a melody and you say it in your iPhone, you listen to it later, whatever.
Yeah.
Let's say you're at home in Moldova in your studio. Can you just kind of talk about the process of making a song?
Well, it's always different, and creating music for me, it's always and it's always about experimenting. So I never really come with a plan that, okay, I should be doing this sort of music and this sort of melody and the structure should be like this because that's what worked the last time.
Right.
And I want to copy that, or I heard a track and I see that it's working really well on the radio or on the dance floor. I want to do something like that. I always go into the studio with an empty mind and just try creating a melody on the piano. And since I've learned piano for so many years, that was always the start point for me. It was always easy for me to create melodies. And as soon as I would have a melody that I'm happy with and I'm already jumping and dancing around the studio, the rest of the elements will just come naturally. So
right.
I'll put on a kick, a bass line. I'll try to find a synth. Then when I have like a basic structure, I would try to bring an original idea somehow so it sounds different from other tracks that I produced or from someone else. So it's all an experiment for me in the studio. I would never know that am I going to make it today? Am I not going to make it?
Right.
You know, it's just moving forward, adding elements. And then the next day I would wake up, I would listen to it. I'll be like, no, this element doesn't sound good. It has to be removed. I'll show it to my close people, to my manager, to my brother, and they'll be like, oh, this is sounds good. Maybe you can add something here and stuff like that. So
yeah.
It's always different. Sometimes it can be just, you know, I heard a sample and it's a kick or it's a snare and I fell in love with it and I just made a rhythm and then I would make the melody after that. So you never know. It's always different things, different ideas. There's no a proper way to make a track.
Right.
Different people, different producers are making it in completely different ways. I mean, for me, it was always about experimenting. And recently, I did a song with Fernando Garibay.
Yeah, and Jake Torrey.
And Jake Torrey last summer. It was a completely different approach. I mean, I came into Fernando's studio. We talked for about 2 hours. He was asking me different questions, what kind of music I like, where do we see this track going and stuff like that. And I was like, we were talking. And I was like, at some point, are we going to make something? Are we going to start producing music? And then I realized that this is just his way of working. And for me is experimenting and just moving to something that I don't know where I'm going to. When to Fernando is creating the whole idea at the beginning and just is a matter of how do we get to that point.
Right.
And it actually worked way faster than my process.
His way,
because, you know, at the beginning, we already knew where are we going to, what kind of track is it going to be, what kind of vocals do we need and stuff like that. And that's why it took only 2 days to make the song. And I've actually learned that from Fernando.
Oh, wow. So how long typically would it take you?
I mean, it would vary. I mean, you can't put a time on a song. It could be a week, it could be a month. Mm-hmm. Some ideas I started years ago and I just, you know, revised them and finished them right now. So it's always different. But Fernando has a system where he's like, okay, we got limited amount of time because he's working on so many projects. So that's why he's created this system where he knows exactly. We create a concept at the beginning and we know exactly where are we going to with this idea.
Yeah. So with continuously working on a song, maybe adding several layers to it and having other people listen to it, is it hard to be done with it?
I mean, you're never done with a song. You can always add and remove and change the small details and make it even better and better. But I've learned that years ago that at a certain point, you have to stop when it sounds decent for you. And I'm always hard on myself, so I know when it sounds decent for me, it will probably sound pretty good for the rest of the people. I would have to stop because there's other projects, and there's actually this problem a lot of producers have. They would always work and work and work on the same track, and they will never finish it. And you can't get anywhere with that. You just have to say, okay, that's it.
Yeah.
Because most of the people wouldn't even notice those details. We put so much effort in that hi-hat that sounds a little bit more intense than the other hi-hat. So most of the people will just listen to the song like one thing. Right. They wouldn't pay attention to those details, you know?
Yes. Is there a certain way that you prefer people to hear, a fan to hear your song for the first time, like let's say
obviously,
in the car,
obviously not on the laptop speakers on the iPhone speaker. I mean, worst case on good sounding headphones,
yeah,
best case on a really good sounding sound system. The ideal case in the same studio I produced it, because that's where it sounds the best.
Yeah. Because just thinking of that, the little...
But that never happens. So.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of when you're talking about kind of the subtle changes that you would notice that aren't subtle to you, but mm-hmm. to someone, maybe that's just playing it over their iPhone or something.
I mean,
you know?
It's interesting that we're producing these songs on these expensive studios that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, and people are listening to them on these cheap headphones that cost $20. So...
Yeah.
How do you put that?
Thanks, Steve Jobs.
Yeah, I can.
Just kidding. So we were kind of talking about this earlier. Does, as a DJ that's going and doing a lot of live shows, specifically someone who's classically trained, who's a classically trained musician,
yeah,
does it bug you when people, there's like the stereotype that DJs are like button pushers?
Well, you know, I think already at this level in 2018, DJs are more artists. So I feel more like a producer. And when I'm playing my music at a live show, I just present my music. So that's my way of presenting my music. Because most of the music that I play in my sets is pretty much mine, with an exception of a few tracks. And even those tracks would be edited and made in a special way so you don't hear them anywhere else.
Yeah.
In this form. So the actual hard work and hard job would be in the studio creating those tracks. And yeah, DJing at this point is relatively easy. Depends how far you want to go technically with DJing, because there are DJs nowadays that can go really far and can do crazy things that normal people wouldn't be able to do it, you know? But then that's already a different type of presenting the music. So I prefer to play, I mean, relatively longer versions of my songs and let the people enjoy the whole thing as I produced it in the studio.
Right. How much are you the one that's sort of deciding as far as the look of your set, the visuals?
Yeah.
How hands-on are you with all of that?
Oh, I'm very involved into that, and I actually have a separate team that is working on the visuals. So for each individual song, I mean, I would come up with ideas. I would tell them, okay, I see kind of this story behind this track. I see this color behind this track. And then, you know, they will come up with something. They will show it to me, and, you know, we'll go from there. If I'm happy, we use it. If not, you know, we're going to do some edits with it. So most of the times, I mean, I know specifically what visuals I have while playing a certain song, even though I don't see the visuals because I'm always the other way around.
Yeah.
So only the people see the visuals. But yeah, since my first album, after I released Find Your Harmony in 2014, I realized that the visuals are very important for, specifically for trance music, because you can tell a story in general. So I got involved into that deeply.
Yeah. So it seems to be very important for the experience of
the
fan.
It is very important, because I can notice a huge difference when I'm playing a festival, like during the day when the sun is up and you don't really see the visuals. So even though there is a VJ and he's playing all the visuals with all the sound and light, you don't see that.
Right.
And that's when the music talks for itself. And you can see that it's harder to interact with the people. And I certainly prefer when I have my visuals, you know, during the night when everything's dark, and also the lights. There's a specific way you can coordinate the lights with the visuals. I mean, when everything is in sync, the music and the visuals and the lights, that's just ideal. And it creates such a beautiful image and such a beautiful story. You can't just describe that in words. You have to be there and experience that.
Yeah, the first time I ever, I feel like, sort of experienced what you're talking about is when I saw The Magician at Exchange in downtown LA. Have you ever played there?
Yeah, I've played many times in Exchange.
It's cool. It used to be a place where it was in the stock market exchange.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and then they rehabbed it. Now it's
I played many venues in Los Angeles. We did the Hollywood Palladium. We did Exchange. Now they have this new venue. It's called Academy.
Oh, and yeah.
Yeah. Which is absolutely incredible. That's in Hollywood.
Oh, okay. I haven't been there. I think
it's amazing. You have to check it out while I'm playing there.
Yeah,
obviously.
Do you have a date that you're going to be in LA coming up?
We just did a date over there. I think it was in May.
Oh, okay.
But obviously, we're going to be back soon.
Yeah, we'll be there. I would. Although the problem is, I need like something to, because working early. I get here at 6 a.m. that we're like on different schedules.
Yeah, you can
schedules.
Come here right after the show.
Yeah, basically. I have to like, you know,
yeah.
drink a Red Bull like I'm drinking right now. So we were talking about this earlier. I briefly lived in England in 2011 and EDM was like just the normal. Like people were used to it. It wasn't.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it was just, you know, I was sort of coming from the U.S. where it wasn't big yet.
Yeah.
And then when I got back, I was still in college. And I remember I would play just certain songs that I liked, like Dash Berlin, just certain music that I'd heard. And I'd play it at a party in college and they'd be like, oh, what is this? And now it's like, it's way more popular.
Obviously,
do you feel like, how far behind do you feel like the EDM scene in America is versus Europe?
I mean, it's hard to judge. You can do some basic math if you want to. Electronic music has been in Europe since 90s, maybe even a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
And obviously, at this point, is way bigger than it used to be then. And with all the big festivals and electronic dance music going more mainstream, it attracted more people.
Right.
But it was always big. I mean, Tiësto was throwing down arenas in Amsterdam in 2002 and 2003 when electronic dance music was able to do that in US, in 2012, 2013?
Yeah.
Around that time. But even though electronic dance music was also in US earlier than that, it wasn't as big, but there were still clubs. And I think DJs like Paul Walkenfold, they were playing here even, you know, at those times in smaller clubs. But you can see now it's popular everywhere.
Yeah.
Asia is also massive. Australia, Europe. I mean, now it's globally big.
Yeah. It's a great time
now
to be
Now is the
you.
Time to go to festivals and enjoy electronic dance music.
Yeah. And there's so many new ones popping up everywhere.
Yeah, every day. I mean, it's technology. Now everybody can produce their songs on laptops. They don't need, you know, big studios, big equipment. You just learn how to program the software. And if you know a little bit of music, then you can make a song over the night and just put it on YouTube and you wake up with 10 million views and there you go.
Yeah.
You sold out Hollywood Palladium.
Just like that.
Yeah, easy.
Now, I know that you guys have to carry on and do some other things today, but I do have a question about, so I've been running to Heavy Love and All Systems Down.
Oh, you love?
From Moments.
Awesome, yeah.
Right?
That's from last year, yeah.
For some reason, those two songs are good for me with running. Has anyone ever told you any like unique things that they do? Like, oh, I love to cook to your music, or oh, I really like to study to your music.
I mean, most of the people that I hear, that listen to my music, specifically to the radio show, while they're training in the gym.
Okay, yeah.
A lot of them do that, but obviously you can listen to any of the music while doing anything. There's people that are watching, which is really weird. I heard that they're watching movies while listening to my music. So they turn off the sound of the movie and they're just watching the image while listening to the radio show. Or I wouldn't be able to do that because when I'm watching a movie, I'm watching a movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I need to understand what's going on. But there's people like that.
Yeah. They're watching like Donnie Darko listening. Yeah. Wow. I don't think I'll try that, but I can see where
that's an interesting experience. Yeah.
But I can see it, I can picture it.
That's gonna be the next challenge.
Yes, definitely. Oh wait, one question.
Okay,
if you were to leave a certain legacy in your music, what do you want it to be?
I mean, you know, I'm trying to obviously, like most of the artists, I want to be in the history. I want to stay in the history for as many years as possible and hopefully as long as other huge artists. But with my music, I'm basically trying to make people happy and leave them with happiness. And I totally saw that it's possible. With my song One in a Million, I think during the past years, I've received so many videos, emails, people getting married to that song, people getting engaged to that song. So for me, One in a Million is that song that, you know, relates to everybody and had that huge interaction with and connection with the people. And hopefully that's gonna happen with every song. Which is not possible, obviously. You cannot make every song a hit and you cannot make every song memorable and you cannot leave a legacy with, you know, every song. So I'm just a musician that is trying to show his vision to the entire world and make people happy. And it certainly works out. And hopefully I'm going to be able to do this for many years in advance. I mean, you never know. I don't have any plans on stop making electronic music.
I can't believe that you almost were an accountant. Right?
I'm happy.
You literally
that
have
not,
the coolest job ever.
I'm happy that I'm not an accountant. Right,
I mean,
now.
Honestly, like, no offense to accountants, one of my best friends is an accountant. But like, just what you do is like, I mean, I'm just thinking of my job versus what he does. It's like the coolest thing. You know what I mean?
It is cool, but it's not as easy as you'd think. Because a lot of people think that, okay, DJs, oh, that's nice, pictures, they're traveling the world, look, great hotels, great views, and stuff like that. But yeah, imagine waking up almost every single day at random times, and you play a show, you get to catch a flight, and then it's every day, every day. You can't stop it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can, but I wouldn't.
But you don't want to.
No.
No. Okay, well, thank you very much for playing until 3, waking up and flying here at 7.
Thank you. No, thank you for having
out.
Me.
Yeah.
It's always great.
Honestly, every time people come in here, I feel like I just learn so much about this certain thing that I didn't know much about. I mean, I feel like I've seen various EDM DJs in shows, but not specifically trance. I really didn't even know that that was a part of EDM, which probably sounds silly because it is. It's a huge thing.
Yeah, it was actually one of the first things that was big in electronic dance music. First thing was probably techno, and then after that it was trance, and then it evolved into so many other genres.
Probably will keep evolving, I think, right?
Hopefully, yeah. You never know. Then it combines with jazz, with pop, with, you know, rock and everything. So it becomes something else.
Yeah, a little smooth R&B, you know.
Well, maybe not that far, but still.
But still. All right, well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. If you enjoy the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and review of what episode you liked and what you liked about it. Don't forget to subscribe to Olympic and Bundy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Play. Once again, I'm Kelly Taylor, and thank you very much for listening.
Has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,